Hello, everybody, and today I'm delighted to be welcoming back an old friend of mine, Ray West, who has the website www.big-lies.org, and there'll be a link, of course, to that in the post for this show, and I'm going to bring him up right now. Ray, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here, alive and kicking, and it's nice to be here as well, I should add. Now,
excellent.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, right, this is about Miles Mathis, who, in my view, is underestimated and has various kind of misstatements made about him. So this is one piece, standalone piece, trying to explain and outline everything that he's done. Now, I first read him in September 2014. I've got an email. At the time, he was working on a so-called Unabomber paper. It's a US thing. And he also has a physics site, but I don't really have time to look at that now. His site, the relevant site here, is Miles W. Mathis. His name is Miles Williams Mathis. So you look for mileswmathis.com. And in my view, he's one of the top revisionists in the English-speaking world. And, you know, you can't say fairer than that. He has a vast array of output as well. Now, I'm going to tell you here how to find his site and navigate around it, which is not as easy as might be. Which you might think. Now, his site is mileswmathis.com. That's as one word, Miles W. Mathis, no punctuation. And don't forget the W. The mileswmathis.com is his science site. Anyway, Miles W. Mathis has there's a moss green background and a picture painting, one of his paintings, Art of the Month, and it has eight links along the top of the screen. If you click on Writings, you've got another menu, and you can pick either the best fake events essays since 2013 or essays 2018 and updates. The selection of best fake events is much shorter and more manageable. It's got about 100 papers. But the other one, the essays 2018 and updates, includes hundreds more papers and tends to have his newest work as well. So you make a choice. If you want to start off, the best fake events might be the easiest. Now, all his papers are in PDF format, that's portable document format, and they're obviously arranged to be printed out. They're portrait format, and they include images and links and pictures, diagrams, that sort of thing. Now, the problem here is that all his PDF format files have short and rather sort of meaningless names. So you need to be able to search his site. Now, you can Google with his URL address plus another topic. For example, if you look for mileswmathis.com/JFK, you'll find about seven papers on Kennedy and the supposed assassination and a large number of other commentaries. And that's, if I may interject here, that's the JFK. His piece on JFK is, I think, unique. He was the first person to suggest that Kennedy, the assassination was faked, and he looks at evidence from the supposed body in a morgue and that kind of thing. And incidentally, he thinks that JFK is gay, as they say, is a homosexual, and gives evidence for that. In a way, it's typical of his approach. He kind of goes where other people fail to go. Now, there's another way of looking at his site, which is going through my site, biglies.org. big-lies.org. There's a link there to Miles Mathis, which resembles a sort of moss screen background, and I've set up a site searcher. I've made this thing search his site online, and my version is probably more stable because Google will change its algorithms now and then. And so look at that, look at the site searcher, and I've got a lot of other information on descriptions, for example, of many of the links. They're much clearer than the short names that Mathis gives to his PDF files. You know, it'll tell you that it's what's going on there. So I recommend this, although you don't have to if you don't want to. Now, why is it important? What is important about Mathis? I think one of the things is that he discovers Jewish interest, and of course that's a very important topic at the present time, since it's been censored for not even for years, for centuries and millennia, in fact. Jews have been secretive, and they've also formed a variety of alliances with various sort of patsies and so on, and these lights tend to be a bit uncertain. I mean, if you look at, I saw recently a picture of a video with Tony Blair in it, and he looks really haggard and worried these days. So, anyway, Mathis is good at both aspects. He looks at Jews, for example, people like Trump, Eisenhower, Churchill, Tony Blair, all this sort of stuff which only which only internet has opened people's eyes to. And I want to go through a whole lot of topics here. He's got such a wide range, it's hard to kind of generalize, but give an example. One topic is the geography of playback.
Butcher. Ray, I was just saying, there. I was just saying about, you mentioned Tony Blair's recent haggard and worried appearance. If you
yes.
A YouTube video of him with all the surviving prime ministers talking about the Holocaust, I was shocked as to how he looked, and you're absolutely correct, he looks completely haggard and he looks very worried. Back to you.
Perhaps he is. Okay, well, I'm sorry about the dropping. It might happen occasionally. I'll try and cut it out in my version anyway. Okay, one topic is geography. If you look at countries like Poland, Lithuania, Hungary, Ukraine, Russia itself have been greatly influenced and damaged, in fact, by Jews. So these countries tend to pop up in Mathis's work. There's an interesting series of five papers which are not actually by Mathis, because he's attracted a following. He has at least, I think, 6 or 8 or 10 sort of co-writers who are on the same wavelength as him. And that was a series investigating the Phoenicians as spooks in ancient times. Another thing is islands. Mathis is quite interested in islands as sort of aquatic castles. He talks quite a bit about Anglesey, for example, off Wales, and the Isle of Man, and Zanzibar off the east coast of Africa, where slaves were traded. Venice is another one. Venice, in the sort of armpit over to the east of Italy. And Elba, interesting stuff about Elba and Napoleon. And I think he would also include Britain and Japan, because both of these have been used as outliers to major continents and sources of war. I mean, Japan, for example, was financed by Jews to go to war with Russia in around about 1900 and something. Now, okay, geography. Now, another one of his interests is pop culture, which is, of course, would appeal to a lot of people in America and elsewhere, tracing the links between influential families and actors and musicians. One of Mathis's techniques is to look at ancestry websites. I've got a list of them on biglies.org/Jews. I've got a list of the he has at least 20, I'd say, sites like that he looks at, and he traces. He believes, whether correct or not, I don't know, that a lot of influential families have produced actors and musicians, including, and for example, the examples he looks at are people like Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Buddy Holly, Ewan McColl, Woody Guthrie, that sort of thing. He looks for meteoric, inexplicable rises in popularity and promotion, that kind of thing. He wrote an interesting paper on J.K. Rowling as well, regarding her as one of a team of the spooks, based in North London, actually. And Mathis was the source. I think he wrote the first paper on John Lennon as a survivor. There was a Canadian film which has been pulled. It's not, no longer obtainable, called Let Him Be, with incredibly convincing sounding Lennon songs. So anyway, there's a lot of that which is worth reading. It's the kind of partly debunking, partly just kind of situating them. Now, there's another one, is his interest in organisations. He looks at the governmental ones. I mean, I've got a list here: CIA, DIA, NSA, NGA, NRO, and things like that. He's interested in spooks, people at Langley, at their little cubicles, turning out their crap. And he also looks at private ones, of course. For example, Philips of Holland is a firm that he's interested in. In fact, he traces much of the modern world to the East India Company, which was the first use of, you know, sea power on a large scale. Very good, very interesting stuff. Now, another one, of course, is US media frauds, which have left very tragic, silted up deposits of rubbish in the American and other psyches. It's mostly, of course, Jewish, and they get cluttered their minds up with endless make-believe and general rubbish. It's very sad, at least to me, that you see people quoting some old Jewish false flag, you know, long disposed of, and with pathetic belief in its truth. You know, you get these people to say, oh, did you know that there was a shooting in Kent State University, that kind of thing, which turns out to be bullshit. So it's like clearing out lumber. You know, there was Bertrand Russell said this about linguistic philosophy, at least in its more useful form, that it's helped clear a lot of lumber, and this is what Mathis can do, I hope. Anyway, hope is be successful. Here's another fraud, the Titanic. He wrote a 34-page paper on the Titanic and looked into all kinds of things like the family links of Captain Smith and the unrealistic, the impossibility of getting instant, unprepared newspaper coverage. In other words, it must have been prepared beforehand, and looks at Lloyd's insurance as regards the Titanic. Another interesting one is the Sharon Tate and Charles Manson stuff, which he regards as it was a surprise to him. He's got a very nice writing style, which looks honest, I presume is. Manson is a little bloke, and he's always shown wearing a beard, but Mathis's research shows that they're not allowed to have beards in prison. He's just a sort of little tiny actor pretending to be a thug. And Sharon Tate, well, it's to do with that Polish filmmaker, but that's very interesting because it kind of completely tears apart this stuff. He has other examples going back in time, for example the Salem witch trials, where he has a list of he pieces together a story, and in fact he also identifies some of the families as being participants in this kind of stuff. It's like a sort of home hobby of producing trash for the plebos. He looks at other things like Nathaniel Hawthorne and Thoreau and Walt Whitman. Very interesting stuff. He's also written very good on Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. Very good assessment. The 1865 event where he was supposed to have been assassinated, but Mathis went in person to the theatre where this was supposed to have happened, and the length of the drop, I mean the chap would have had to drop an implausibly large amount to do his piece, and the actor was actually, Booth was a Jew, and I presume, I'm just guessing really, that when he gave his Latin announcement about the sick tyrannus, this and the other, it may have been to disguise his Jewish accent. It would have sounded a bit silly if he'd said, you know, oy vey, look what I done. There's another example, it's Custer, the Custer Last Stand, interesting analysis of photos, which is another specialty. He's a portrait painter, so I think he can claim reasonably enough to have good insight into fake photos or photos that have been retouched, and so he does that. It's another one of his little strings to his bow. Another example is Martin Luther King. He's got a piece on this. He's obviously, King was obviously, everybody knows, I presume, that he was a fake Jew front. He was a horrible piece of shit, and the demotic. And anyway, to look up any of these. Now, another thing, of course, which has to be looked at, and he does it very well, is false flags. In other words, just fake stories which are put out. He's got a good one. In fact, on my website, I've got two links. I've got one to Pittsburgh in October 2018, and Las Vegas in October 2017. And of course, they've got a problem, of course, with modern video techniques. Other people might video it, or they have to make it look convincing. They have to cover all the corners, and they don't usually do that. Which, you know, I imagine they're just paid peanuts for being so-called crisis actors. he's got one. He's got a good set of pieces on Christchurch in New Zealand, which is obviously a fake thing. Now, anyway, that's all interesting stuff. Now, to look at the more sort of remote view, the more historical view, Mathis is also good on trying to look at the connections between landed aristocrats, you know, the landed aristocracy around the world. I mean, he maintains, I think correctly, that Jews were not only, well, everybody knows that Jews sort of infected the British aristocracy to a wide extent, but he's extended that looking at Russia. He thinks that the Russians were also infected in the same sort of way. Lenin, for example, he thinks, after looking at his ancestry, Lenin was an aristocrat, believe it or not. And of course, a lot of people spoke Yiddish. In fact, some of the Tsars spoke Yiddish. Anyway, he's got the landed aristocracy, which he regards as one sort of unit. He also looks at merchants, who, of course, are another unit, and of course, they're liable to travel. I mean, one of the bases of Jewish power was the fact that they either were or took over sea lanes, you know, shipping right back to the Phoenicians and the Mediterranean. And of course, the Mediterranean is an exceptionally big lake, inland sea. It's the biggest in the world, much, much bigger than the Great Lakes, for example. It's ideal for people who are adventurous but not, you know, don't want to go to, you know, it's not like climbing in Antarctica or something. It's basically a sensible thing to do. Anyway, merchants. And then he also looks at, obviously, at bankers, and of course that's another very interesting thing where you're looking at all kinds of potential frauds and fakes and inferior money and that sort of thing. And various countries, you know, Italy being an obvious example. And for example, he thinks that the Medici were actually Jews, if you look into it. And that's a very, very fruitful view of things, in my view. He also looks at what I might call proto-scientists. I mean, science is relatively new in the world scene. But you have to look at people like Dee is a good example. These people who are, there's a kind of interwoven thing with, alchemists, that kind of thing. And of course they get a bad press. I mean, I've seen people who should know better being very contemptuous about alchemists, but of course if you were an alchemist at the time, nobody's thought of the periodic table, nobody has the equipment or anything. So to be fair, you have to kind of scale things back. Now another one is interesting, especially promoted belief systems, for example millenarians, Puritans and so on, and he looks at some of these things very efficiently. He's had a piece on Quakers, which maintains that Fox, the inventor of Quakers, was essentially just a Jew, presumably called Fuchs or something like that, and Cromwell befriended him. This is at the time where heretics had their tongues bored with hot irons, and they were flogged at, killed, basically just killed off, given hard labour and stuff, and the Quakers were certainly given a special exemption. And I think, well, anyway, there's a very good piece by Mathis on that. There's also a whole lot of stuff on occults or secret intelligence or spooks, which he kind of tends to group together. He maintains that there are millions of them, millions of people who count as spies, spooks or propagandists or what have you. So that's interesting stuff. And of course it's easy for us to forget that things like, you know, telephones and radio, and all this is really quite new. Even newspapers are quite new in any, you know, mass-produced sense. And before that you were essentially on your own. You had spies and, you know, people keeping lookouts and whispered stuff and all the rest of it. So they're something which is really quite important worldwide, and also rather difficult to pin down because, of course, they're not going to advertise. He's got another very good thing on them, which is derives, I think, from his interest in people's ancestries, and he looks at official dynasties, and so he maintains that a lot of wars were actually essentially fakes. For example, the Wars of the Roses, it was just a way of transferring you know, from one house to another. And it, basically, the people at the time didn't even know there was a war going on. And of course, it's different from serious wars where you get the fur really flies. That's a different kind of thing. His dynastic name, some of the, for example, the Jagiellons or Jagiellons of Poland, he's traced them as far as he could from moving out of Poland into Western Europe. And he has a very recent, I think it's his most recent paper, is him quoting another writer on Iran, and he says that the Iranian rulers are all from the same dynasty, going back many, many centuries, although they change their name occasionally to make it look as though it's a different group. And in Antarctica or something, it's basically a sensible thing to do. Anyway, merchants. And then he also looks at, obviously, at bankers, and of course that's another very interesting thing where you're looking at all kinds of potential frauds and fakes and inferior money and that sort of thing. And various countries, you know, Italy being an obvious example. And for example, he thinks that the Medici were actually Jews, if you look into it. And that's a very, very fruitful view of things, in my view. He also looks at what I might call proto-scientists. I mean, science is relatively new in the world scene. But you have to look at people like Dee is a good example. These people who are, there's a kind of interwoven thing with, you know, alchemists, that kind of thing. And of course they get a bad press. I mean, I've seen people who should know better being very contemptuous about alchemists. But of course if you were an alchemist at the time, nobody's thought of the periodic table. Nobody's, you know, nobody has the equipment or anything. So to be fair, you have to kind of scale things back. Now another one is interesting, especially promoted belief systems, for example, millenarians, Puritans, and so on. And he looks at some of these things very efficiently. He's had a piece on Quakers, which maintains that Fox, the inventor of Quakers, was essentially just a Jew, presumably called Fuchs or something like that, and Cromwell befriended him. This is at the time where heretics were had the, you know, their tongues bored with hot irons, and they were flogged at, in, you know, killed, basically just killed off, given hard labour and stuff. And the Quakers were certainly given a special exemption. And I think, well, anyway, there's a very good piece by Mathis on that. There's also a whole lot of stuff on occults or secret intelligence or spooks, which he kind of tends to group together. He maintains that there are millions of them, millions of people who count as spies, spooks or propagandists or what have you. So that's interesting stuff. And of course it's easy for us to forget that things like, you know, telephones and radio and all this is really quite new. Even newspapers are quite new in any, you know, mass produced sense. And before that you were essentially on your own. You had spies and, you know, people keeping lookouts and whispered stuff and all the rest of it. So they're something which is really quite important worldwide, and also rather difficult to pin down because, of course, they're not going to advertise. He's got another very good thing on them, which is derives, I think, from his interest in people's ancestries, and he looks at official dynasties. And so he maintains that a lot of wars were actually essentially fakes. For example, the Wars of the Roses, it was just a way of transferring, you know, from one house to another. And it, basically, the people at the time didn't even know there was a war going on. And of course, it's different from serious wars where you get the fur really flies. That's a different kind of thing. His dynastic name, some of the, for example, the Jagiellons or Jagiellons of Poland, he's traced them as far as he could from moving out of Poland into Western Europe. And he has a very recent, I think it's his most recent paper, is him quoting another writer on Iran. And he says that the Iranian rulers are all from the same dynasty, going back many, many centuries, although they change their name occasionally to make it look as though it's a different group. And I think, I don't know if he's how much he takes seriously the Talmudic stuff. I mean, in my best guess is that in the 20th century, in effect, the 30 Years' War was deliberately intended just to kill whites and others, if they could be killed as well. It was a Jewish sort of conspiracy against whites, setting all of them against each other. And he is good on Germany because he's carefully burrowed through the Nazi part.
Bringing Ray back in now. Ray, please continue.
Okay, the Nazi Party. Yes, he went right through the biographies and the published information on Hitler and the leading Nazis, and he regards them as one of a team of Jews, basically. And of course, this is something that it's not a popular view with most people. You get the conventional people, and you know, people who are too lazy to investigate, which, you know, it's not surprising. And other people, for example, David Irving might be some kind of spook. And Mathers wrote quite a good piece on that, because Irving takes the view. He writes his books on Hitler or on Churchill, but he doesn't do the stuff communicating between the other Jewish-run countries, because at the time, obviously, Jews had pretty much full control of the USA. You know, they could determine wars, they could determine it was in the Depression, he could determine, the Jews could determine who's going to get any money. That's a huge industrialized country, and in Europe, if you look at Russia, of course, that was, the USSR was Jewish. They could go through almost any genocide or killing, and they had control of the media in Europe, so that would pass unnoticed. And of course, the British Empire was also essentially a Jewish thing, so I don't think it's a joke or a stretch to regard the World War, the Second World War, as being Jews versus the rest, Jews and their you know, allies or associates or whatever, versus the rest. Anyway, I don't think Mathers actually goes too far as to say that, but it kind of is implicit in what he says. He's also written very good papers on Marx and Lenin and Stalin. Some of his stuff actually is common sense, really. He often writes, do they really expect anyone to believe this stuff? And he's talking about some, you know, supposed revolution or supposed insurrection. And it's just not the sort of thing that soldiers or sailors will ever do. So he's very revealing in that sense, and it's certainly worth a read. And as regards the USA, he extends this backwards, includes the 1776, the US so-called revolution, and he looks at people like Washington in a fairly unflattering light. He also looks at people like Rockefeller and false names. He traced these people typically with rock in their name, right back to 400 AD, and the Saxe, Coburg, Gotha dynasties, with Saxe, or Saxe, being possibly the same as the Saxes that we have now. So he's got a very, very wide range of topics, and he's got a good writing style, actually. A lot of people can't write, I mean, they don't write very well. But anyway, I'm saying it's worth reading. If I can't get this across, I'm failing in what I'm trying to do here. Now, the next question is, how does he do it? What's going on here? And if you look at, as I say, if you looked at my big-lies.org/Jews, there's a list here of online genealogy sites, Ancestry.com and Avotenu, it's a Jewish names site, Burke's Peerage, Gina.com, there's a lot of them. And he looks at book archives as well, which you have to do, of course. And he also looks at biographies and a lot of them, of course, are bullshit, but he looks for red flags. He also looks at visual clues derived from his portrait painting, as I was saying, and things like facial similarities and body similarities, and sort of fake photo fakery, and a vaguely related thing is the use of identical twins. If you've got some intelligent source, it's useful to have lookalikes, and identical twins, you know, you don't get much more of a lookalike than those. He also looks at organisational procedures and promotions, you know, in who's who in legal hierarchies, military hierarchies and so on, and intelligence structures, so far as these are known. And of course on the internet now, you have unprecedented access to documents, things like monographs, books, news items, biographies, photos, and maps, aerial maps, and you know, other sort forms of maps, old maps, and museum exhibits. There's some interesting ones there, looking at Jews around the world, and paintings. And even the biggest libraries in the past don't have as much of coverage as internet does now. So there's all this stuff, and he's very good at it. And I hope he forms a school, which will perhaps, yeah, which no doubt will have its own interests. But I'm quite pleased with what he's done. A lot of his stuff actually taken out of Wikipedia, which looks a bit unexpected at first sight. But of course, if you've got a huge dictionary, it's just much easier to just quote other stuff already existing, and that's forms a starting point. And we have all kinds of stuff here. I've got a note here on Lambert Simnel and Perkin Warbeck, who used to form part of the Jewish controlled. They were Jewish controlled pretenders to the throne in Britain. And it's fascinating to see how they can infiltrate things, particularly in small groups, you know, families or aristocracies. They're not so good at infiltrating large-scale stuff. Anyway, that's all fairly obvious. Once you get the hang of what he's doing, let me just give two examples here of him looking back at the past. I've got these, I've cut them out of one of my pieces here. 1492... The Reconquista of Spain by Ferdinand and Isabella. And, of course, from the Jews' point of view, that was what they call an expulsion, which may have been their decision to leave. You just can't tell. They often describe themselves as being expelled, although what it means is, in effect, that they decided to go. And there's quite an interesting consequence of that, that some of them with shipping connections became pirates.
Ray, just while you went there, I was just letting the audience know about the writings of Miles Mathis Page and how you've got the fake events, the essays, and then essays sorted out by year. Please continue. We're talking about the Reconquista of Spain.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I was just saying there's this unexpected side effect that there's a book actually called Jewish Pirates of the Caribbean. But that's an interesting thing which is not ever discussed. It's similar to Jews controlling the slave trade. You know, it's taken the Nation of Islam, I think, were the first people to kind of popularize, you know, force the idea into the open. But the same thing seems to have been true in Jamaica. Port Royal was the wickedest city in the world, with no doubt with the brothels and forced sex. And in fact, the skull and crossbones seems to be a Jewish thing, as suggested by this skull and bones business. Anyway, that's quite interesting. Another example I've got a note here is 1572 St. Bartholomew's Day massacre in France. And there's a really quite ingenious piece here by Mathis about the king, Henry II of France, being liked to have been poisoned. And let me just quote a bit here. We find a strange reaction from Montgomery, who had been savagely repressing Huguenots in the Scotch Guard. Then he joined them and waged war against France. I suggest he was chosen as a scapegoat for the king's death and didn't appreciate it. And probably he became aware of what the Medici faction was up to, and they'd just performed a successful coup through the queen, Catherine de Medici. So Montgomery's war wasn't against France, but against the Medici's. He should be seen as a hero. The religious wars of that period had been sold under a false pretext. We were told it was between Catholics and Protestants. But seeing that Paris was ruled by the Jewish Medici's, we see that it was a war of the Medici's against the Christian Church. Catherine ordered the rich Huguenots murdered in the St. Bartholomew's Day massacres, not because they were Protestant, but because they were aristocrats and Christian, and it printed on Protestant minds the indelible conviction that Catholicism was a bloody and treacherous religion. Very good stuff. He wrote very good stuff on the French Revolution, the so-called French Revolution, and on Napoleon. He wrote a nice piece on, was Napoleon Jewish, and he says that a lot of the war, Napoleon Wars, must have been faked or misrepresented because they're just not credible, and he writes a good piece on that. I've got a lot of other things here. I don't really want to go into them in detail. I see. I'm not sure how long we've spent so far. Sorry, because I keep getting interrupted.
We've got about 23-24 minutes left.
Okay. Let me ask you about this. Now, you assumed that Mathis was Jewish, although he denies it. He says his mum was Irish, I think. And, of course, if you have somebody like him, you're going to get all kinds of myths and stories and legends and lies being set out. He says, in fact, that whenever he produces his stuff, he looks and he finds counter-attempts, which he's rather contemptuous of, understandably, because these are just hired hacks, as they're worthless scum, aren't they? Do you have any comments in any of this yourself? Because I presume this is new to you.
Yeah, I mean, I must confess, until he told me about Miles Mathis, I wasn't aware of him, and I know that you're a big fan, and I thought that you had said, but obviously you hadn't, and then we had a chat before we went on air, and I was like, people might say yes, because there's a singer called Johnny Mathis who has the same spelling of the surname, and he's Jewish, and that's how a lot of people work. I mean, even going back years when I was emailing Daryl Bradford Smith my timeline, that became the Synagogue of Satan, Rothschild timeline. And he used to say on this show, I've got collaborators who are Jewish, it's not all Jews. And then one day he phones me up, he says, now, Andy, you're Jewish, aren't you? And I'm like, what? And he said, well, your surname, Hitchcock, Alfred Hitchcock was Jewish. And the funny thing is although my surname, my actual birth name is Webb, as in the reporter Gary Webb, who supposedly shot himself twice in the back of the head. But I took my stepfather's name when I was 11 because I hadn't seen my natural father for years. But even the name Hitchcock and Alfred Hitchcock is not Jewish. I mean, I know you look at his face and he looks quite odd, shall we say, but he's not supposed to be Jewish, and my stepfather certainly wasn't. But that's how people sometimes think, and then they'll be working with somebody and they're too embarrassed to sort of say, look, are you Jewish or what have you?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, at the end of the day, what I do now is I'll look at someone like Brother Nathaniel, for example. I listen to his shows with Jeff Rentz and I enjoy them and I find them, quite informative and things like that. So from my point of view, I mean, if the guy says that he isn't, and the sort of stuff that he's writing, certainly a lot of people who are exposing these people get accused of being these people. And so I think that's some sort of psychop out there. And it sounds to me that if others have said that about him, then he's as much of a victim of that as many other people in the alternative movement have been. Ray, does that answer your question?
Relevant. I think the way Mathis decides on whether people are Jewish is a complicated thing. You can't always be sure. You look at the supposed maternal line, which I don't think is historically held at all times. I think there must have been stages where maternal descent was not taken seriously. But anyway, you look at their mothers, and in particular you look at whether they've been so-called scrubbed. That's his word, Mathis's word for, if you're looking at a genealogy of somebody, you often find bits missing, and if the mother is excised from the record, then that's some sort of indication that they might be Jewish. And of course, throughout the 1900s, right to the end of it, there were Jewish immigrants, and the first thing they do is change their name. And of course, that's a tricky thing. I mean, for example, I think that George Galloway is probably a Jew whose ancestors changed their names to something. You know, they pick a deliberately either a Scottish or, you know, a Welsh or something name, or something that sounds, you know, unimportant, like Smith or Jones or whatever. But although sometimes they change their name to something which is distinctive. It's a new name, and these lords. I mean, Sidney Webb is an example. He was a Jew from, so I don't know. I've never been able to. I'm not interested enough really to piece together his. He's a Webb, by the way. Perhaps you're related to Sidney Webb. but anyway. So he's quite good on that. I'm just saying that, without going into immense details, he's quite good on identifying Jews. He's also quite good on. A good important aspect is cloth. Actually, he identifies cloth as being, because it needs the ability to move things around, and it also needs equipment. So you need middlemen. He wrote some very good, very interesting stuff on purple, Tyrian purple. You know, it's this mollusk found in Italy. Oh, fuck it.
Hey, you just come back in again and talking about different names, and I just, for example, someone would say an obvious Jewish name is the name Stein, S-T-E-I-N, but of course that's of German origin, and the German translation of Stein is stone.
Yes, okay, right.
And so not all people with the name Stein, but what's happened, you see, is, as you said about these people adopting common names in their country residents at the time, that's continued through, and so people automatically assume that name must be that, when actually it was adopted by this group in the past. So it's very, very confusing.
Well, according to Hilaire Belloc, the Germans had a policy of forcing surnames onto Jews, and so the ones, if you get these weird, you know how with company names, often they're ridiculous names, like, you know, Spiral Carpet Limited or something. They're computer generated these days. There's something similar in Germany. They'd invent names like, you know, Flowerfield, Blumenfeld, that kind of thing, or Lippstadt is a good example. I don't know, you know, it means Lip City, Lip Town, something like that. And if it's a pair of things, not so much Stein as, you know, Bernstein or, you know, something Stein, Baumstein, that's generally an indication that there's some Jewish thing there. Sorry, I was just discussing cloth there, the purple, Tyrian purple, royal purple, and generally speaking, if there's some cloth connection, that's a Jewish thing. He maintains. It's a very, very interesting point. He looked at the, as I said before, he looked at the, you know, the East India Company and other companies, Dutch East India Company and so on, although not in great detail. He's not so good on accounting. I think this is something that people with the right temperament and knowledge and stuff could look at, which is the financial thing. I mean, I think one of the big problems with looking at the Second World War is capital flows. You know, I mean, it's known that America gave the Soviet Union in the middle of the war a billion or something. In other words, it's not really, they don't give them any money, it's just all credit. It means they can get from America a billion worth, which in those days, of course, was a hell of a lot more of machinery and fuel and stuff, so they could kill off more non-Jews. But of course, these things people get this out of kilter. They're not used to handling big numbers, although it's perfectly simple, really. I mean, most people, or many people, must have noticed that if you're at a school or a factory or something, payday is quite a big thing. I mean, obviously, if you've got 1,000 people, then whatever their weekly or monthly earnings are, if you multiply that by by 1,000, you get quite a big sum. Very obvious, and of course it's obvious if you've got populations of millions and millions, that there have to be movements of billions. But people kind of can't get a bit flustered about that. They can't understand it. But it's very important. If you can overview Europe and the US and Russia in, say, the 1930s, that, I think, would provide a good clue. If that was done properly, it would point clearly to Germany having been a beneficiary. There's a theory that Germany, Nazi Germany, flourished, and the official writer, somebody called Feder, I think, Feder, F-E-D-E-R, something like that, Theodor Feder, I think, and he did, but his descriptions of it are not enumerate. They say things like, you know, the Führer's policy was to do this and that, and, you know, so on and so on. But the full impact of it is not there. So I suspect that, in fact, if you look into it, you'll find that that the view of Jews as having fermented the Second World War and the First World War as well, which happened just after the Federal Reserve was invented in 1913, ideally placed time-wise to start a war and, you know, wreck the gullible and smug Europeans. Are quite, in a way, it's quite right. It is one of the very important things for people like Mathis is the revisionist thing. They're producing a complete philosophy, a complete view of how all this stuff was done, and that's very important, because otherwise people are cut off. They say something like, you know, what about atrocities, you know, and you have to be able to fight back and say, well, it's completely unproven, and there are plenty of atrocities against other people, which obviously Jews forget about. So that's, I think, I cannot stress really enough that how important Mathis is. I'm trying to get this idea across. Much more important than any academic anywhere that I know of, anyway. Much more important than, for example, Chomsky, who we all now was a phony, and he was much more important than, for example, Bertrand Russell was. I mean, Russell was a typical either a useful idiot or a kind of secret collaborator type. But he contributed virtually nothing to understanding the world. And so I'd regard Mathis possibly as being something like an H.G. Wells updated. I mean, Wells wrote books on history, on world history. He wrote a short history of the world and a not-so-short history of the world, which came out after the First World War. But he wasn't completely Jew-naive. He did write a few things, which I've got on my website as well, actually, come to it, on Jews, but he didn't get the full picture at all, which, of course, it's not surprising, it was censored. And I mean, Orwell was the same. Orwell made a few comments on Jews, but he obviously hadn't really much of a clue. So I promise you that Mathis is important and deserves reading, and I hope... I think he's more important than... You see, a lot of other people... I mean, a good example is Kevin MacDonald of the Occidental Observer. And he wrote his Culture of Critique, which was then priced, I think it was $80 or something, in 1995. Another was about 25 years ago. And he's done nothing about 9/11, which, of course, was a Jewish thing. He's done nothing about the extortions of money because of the Holocaust fake, and he's done nothing about Jewish wars in, you know, the Middle East, North Africa. So he's been treading water, and he's done nothing, really. And there are a lot of people like that, but so I think Mathis is actually probably the most important of these people.
I'll just jumping in, with regard to Kevin MacDonald, funny enough, I read... The Culture of Critique, and I think that he would argue that his background is in psychology, and so he only focuses on psychology. He doesn't. His what I'm saying is if you're on mastermind. His chosen specialised subject is Jews. His chosen specialised subject is psychology. And most of that book, there's one chapter in there with absolutely astounding information on Jewish attempts to change the immigration quotas in America that I haven't found anywhere else. But the rest of it wasn't really for me because it was a psychology book. So when I had him on the program, Ray, you're saying when you dropped, and this should take us through to about the end because you're going about every 8 minutes. So if you drop next time, I'll wrap it up. Play the closing music, but we are getting through. I'm filling in when you go. It was just wrapping up about Kevin McDonald, really. I mean, I was just saying that when he was on this show, that I only focused on the chapter that talked about all the attempts to change US immigration policy. But I agree, you do a lot of work. Your work is a broad church. My work is a broad church. We look at all the issues that you just raised, but there are people out there that would argue that they may be sympathetic to what we say, but they don't say them because that's not their field of expertise.
Yeah, I do feel
but,
a bit.
Back to you.
I do feel a bit kind of treacherous in saying these things about McDonald, but you know, it's been 25 years, and he does have a website. I mean, the Occidental Observer. I mean, he could easily host writers who discuss these issues, and they are important issues. I mean, look, the Holocaust fake, the continual promotion by Jews of immigration, of unwanted immigration. It's you know, they're very, very serious issues, and I think he's just on his, you know, resting on his laurels. But I'm conscious. I don't like to say that with any great pleasure. He could have done more, and 25 years, he could have written two or three more books, you know. Anyway, he's an example, but there are plenty of other examples. For example, the chap who writes on the Talmud, Hoffman, Michael A. Hoffman II, I think he is, and he's quite good on the Talmud, but he doesn't sort of update it. He doesn't link it to events which are happening now, and which, of course, are, from our point of view, much more important, really. So he provides a kind of skeleton of a sort of framework, but he doesn't generalize it, he doesn't work. I mean, for example, the idea that the Second World War was Jews collaborating against trying to maximize white deaths is not something that you get in Hoffman, although it's obviously completely consonant with the Talmud. So kind of he's a bit disappointing as well. So, you know, anyway, I'm just saying that math is kind of fairly fearless, and he goes zomping in, and he's evidence based, so I think he's very good, it does annoy one to see these vast numbers of sort of historians, history teachers, history writers, you know, these media pontificators, just omitting this stuff because they're too fucking cowardly, to coin a phrase. Really depressing, isn't it? But what will happen, I don't know. I hope we're on a cusp of a big change. In fact, I don't know what you think of this, but I do have a view that it's... And if you look at the history of science, you know, the intellectual progress, assuming optimistically that it's going to continue, the stuff that came first, in a way, is more both easier, perhaps is not a very good way of putting it, but it looks easier, and it doesn't involve human intervention. I mean, it started with astronomy, and obviously nobody's going to sort of move the sun around or something. And astronomy was purely a matter of deduction and observation. And I think they did a good job. I think the Egyptians were a bit dim, I think, because they thought the sun had a burrow under the earth, you know, at night, which was not particularly good. But anyway, so the development of that aspect of science was very good. Then there was things like agriculture and domestication of animals, so food was sort of taken care of, and there was transport, you know, you had sailing ships and so on, and right up to the present day, I mean, you've got science, but it was been, yeah, and if you look at a lot of these things, very recent, the germ theory of disease, for example, is only 1880, 1890 or something. And so I'm not that pessimistic. I think at the moment we have the situation where Jews work hard to tell lies and deceive, but once that's understood as a mechanism, as a psychological mechanism, then it's open to being burrowed into, and no doubt there will be lots of people who are the equivalent of people who never believed in bacteria, who scorned modern knowledge, or who couldn't be bothered to master things like the gases and oxygen and nitrogen, that sort of thing, or who deny evolution. There are people like that. Whereas, I mean, there are bound to be a whole lot of people who are obsessed by this Jewish thing and contribute nothing to it. But I'm not entirely pessimistic. I think we may be at a stage where psychology will develop to a point where this stuff becomes understood and countermeasures can be installed. And so that people know it's not that bad at the moment. If you remember Jordan Peterson, I don't know how popular he is now. He took his orders from Soros. You know, he's doing all this stuff about it's carefully hidden Jewish promotion. But I think a lot of people know what I'm talking about now. And similarly with quite a few of these people like Tommy Robinson and Sargon of Akkad, as he's known, Carl Benjamin, they're pretty obviously now just being handled by Jews or Zionists, whatever you call them. So I'm not entirely pessimistic, but who knows? You know, maybe we'll end up. Maybe there'll be a huge dark age lasting for a few thousand years with foolish Jews going on about climate change, you know, telling lies about things like climate change, or promoting vaccination, you know, without... These people know nothing about science, you know. And so, anyway, it's in the balance. I don't know what's going to happen, but let's hope it's for the good. Sorry, you're still there?
Absolutely.
Sorry, you were very quiet.
You've wrapped that up really well, because we're coming right to the end of the show. But before we go, we've got about another minute. I just want to let the audience know your website, big-lies.org, and then the Miles Mathis website, mileswmathis.com. Links to both of those websites, folks, will be in the post for this show. Ray, give us 30 seconds to close
this
out.
Yeah, I do hope, incidentally, that Miles Mathis will hear this and not be too put off by my not very wonderful presentation. Because he'd make a very good speaker, very important speaker. So come on, Miles, get your headphones out. And that's about it, really. But anyway, thanks, Andrew, for hosting me here.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ray. It's been too long having you on the show. You are a friend, and I'm delighted to have you on today. I want to thank everybody for listening. I will, of course, be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, folks, bye for now.
This has been the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on Eurofolk Radio. To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. You can support Andy's work by going to his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, where his book, The Synagogue of Satan, is available in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.